So you end up with millions more people who ended up accidentally leaving money in plans that they don't remember proactively joining because they didn't.
Can somebody take their 401k that they've had in their business 401k and a match over many years, and at some point, I'll say, roll that over?
Starting at the turn of this century, companies were allowed to automatically put their employees in 401ks. So now, this many years later, maybe it's grown. So going and looking for the proverbial $20 bill in your winter coats, except that this could be $20,000 or more. If you are not sure, you should.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial, legal, or investment advice. Please consult a professional advisor before making any decision based on what you hear on the show. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Distress to Success, where we talk with professionals who are helping reinvent blighted communities in a profitable way. Today, I was lucky enough to snag some time from Henry Yoshida. He's actually the CEO and co-founder of Rocket Dollar, which is a platform that helps people unlock their money into private investments. Now, I won't steal all of Henry's thunder, because it's a really cool concept of the self-directed IRA, and a lot of people don't know about it. But let me start off with Henry. Thanks so much for joining us, and welcome.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Well, I got to be honest, when you reached out and then I learned who you were, it was a little bit crazy, because we actually have a couple of investors in our fund, Mount North Capital, that have used Rocket Dollar and Digital Trust. So it was a little wild to say, hey, I'm going to speak to the CEO and co-founder of that self-directed IRA, group. So anyway, this was a really cool moment. Thanks for being on. I think let's start a little bit of just explain what Rocket Dollar and Digital Trust and what they do, and then we can dive into your background from there.
Sure. The Rocket Dollar platform and Digital Trust, we're one and the same. So we're the same company, same ownership. The Digital Trust part, just think of it as like our depository. It's our custodian. It's where we hold the investments on behalf of our customers. And then Rocket Dollar is the platform. And our platform lets people create, as you mentioned, IRA accounts with the same tax treatment that anyone in America who has an IRA knows about. So no taxes, tax deferrals down the road. If it's a Roth, then there's no taxes at all. You keep those same tax benefits, but instead of stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, our IRAs allow our customers to purchase private and alternative investments. So specific to your community, that could be a rental real estate, for example. We have people that do all sorts of private investments, but real estate is actually one of our top three asset classes that we hold on behalf of customers. And with $12 billion overall, it represents a multiple billion dollar part of our portfolio.
Interesting.
On behalf of clients.
Yes, it's fascinating. Just a random question, just because I get it regularly and I don't honestly know the answer. I always get nervous, telling people any advice when it comes to their money, whether AI says it or not. So I'll ask you, as an expert, can somebody take their 401k that they've had in their business 401k, right, and a match over many years, and at some point, I'll say, roll that over? I don't know if that's the right term, or convert that into a self-directed IRA.
That is the technical term. It's called rollover. The one caveat, and I don't know if it was clear in the statement you made, is that if it's a ex-employer, so the way I always tell people is that you may or may not have one current job with a 401k, but you have a lot of past jobs with 401ks. And if you had contributed to the 401k plan there and accumulated monies and left it in that 401k plan, and you no longer work at that organization, you are eligible to roll to an IRA at a traditional provider, or one that would allow you to invest in private and alternative deals like Rocket Dollar. And this is a big thing. So maybe this is something for your audience to know about right now, that if you are not sure, you should look, because starting at the turn of this century, companies were allowed to automatically put their employees in 401ks. So you end up with millions more people who ended up accidentally leaving money in plans that they don't remember proactively joining because they didn't. They were automatically enrolled at some percent of their salary. So now, this many years later, maybe it's grown. So it's like going and looking for the proverbial $20 bill in your winter coats. Now that we're almost getting to March.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Except that this could be $20,000 or more.
Yeah. It adds up, especially over time, for sure.
Right.
Well, okay. I just want to kind of get that out of the way, just so people understand, exactly what Rocket Dollar is and your background. But I guess I always love, you know, hearing about the success and how people got to where you're at today. You're obviously an entrepreneur, have been for many years, but can you kind of, I guess, give us a little bit of the background and story of, like, from the time you decided, hey, this is, you know, maybe I do want to be an entrepreneur, and how you got to the success you have now?
I don't know if I actually decided that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. So I started my career in corporate at Merrill Lynch. I was there for 10 years. The last two, I was there from 2000 to 2010. The last two was technically under the umbrella of Bank of America. They took over Merrill Lynch in the 2008 credit crisis, if people don't know. And it became harder for me to operate the type of business I was doing. So I was consulting on mid-market company 401k plans at that time. So I was already in this tax advantaged account space, not quite doing what Rocket Dollar does, but in that ecosystem. And being owned by a bank, it was difficult to do what we do. So my partner and I made the decision to lift and shift our team out of Bank of America Merrill Lynch and create an independent consulting shop and negotiate which clients we wouldn't take with us, which ones we'd take with us. And so that entrepreneurial decision wasn't I'm sick and tired of this corporate, you know, rat race, and I'm going to quit and go hang up my own shingle tomorrow. So hopefully you weren't expecting that, but it was a more calculated. It just made sense for us. It made sense for the clients that we had spent years building relationships with. And we negotiated in good faith with the Bank of America side and split the client base up and left. And that was the first entrepreneurial journey. So I think the one that's a little more relevant to what you're asking about was, as I was doing the consulting shop, we had the opportunity. But one of the things that really hit me hard was that we had our shop set up at a point where we were limited by the times, because we were paid by the time that we spent on client engagements, and you weren't really able to service more folks that way. So the thinking for me was that if I sell my stake in this, maybe I can do something that has the ability to affect more people beyond, like, you know, the engagements I have based on time and the size of the overall account. And it was just that sort of idea that maybe I could help others. And if it didn't work, I could always go back. You know, there was always an opportunity for me to go back. So I would say that although I left and took that plunge to create a tech company, my first one after the consulting business, it wasn't that there wasn't a safety net either. It was always this sort of confidence that I could go back and do exactly what I was doing if I failed. But if I didn't try, I would never know if it would succeed. And that was kind of maybe this model of the Jeff Bezos. I mean, he was making $1 million salary in the 90s as an investment banker working at D.E. Shaw. And D.E. Shaw himself, the famous investment banker, said, "Why would you leave this cush job and go do what you're doing?" And he said, "I could always come back to it. But the one thing is, if I sit in my deathbed at 80 and ask myself what might have been if I never tried, I'd never know. So I decided to leave and sell books on this thing called the internet. And look what happened to him."
Yeah, he did all right. Not too shabby, right?
he did okay. I don't know. I see him on Instagram with his yacht the size of my street.
Yeah. He's done more than okay for sure. Right. So was that tech company that you'd form, is that what became Rocket Dollar, or what's that look like?
I had one prior, so it's kind of funny because the name of my current company is Rocket Dollar. The one prior was called Honest Dollar. So it was a consumer fintech company, a digital wealth management tool for Roth IRAs, and we raised venture money for that. Got the product launched, got it approved with regulators, but, you know, needed to seek another round of funding to really take that in a go-to-market strategy for building and scaling the customer base. And the economics didn't look good for that because of the customer demographic that we were trying to serve, gig economy workers, and offering them Roth IRAs through a mobile app-based platform. But the chassis and the assets were good, so we had more inbound acquisition interest, so we ended up selling that company, the assets of it, and it was sold to a Wall Street firm, Goldman Sachs, in 2016.
Well, very nice, very nice. And then you started Rocket Dollar after that?
Right, yeah, in 2018 was the start of Rocket Dollar.
Now, I think, I guess, earlier, as in, I'll say, in the proverbial green room, we were talking a little bit about how Rocket Dollar and Digital Trust eventually came together. Yeah, can you kind of rehash?
Sure. So when I started Rocket Dollar, we didn't have the bandwidth. We chose to be in the business of having a front-facing platform so people could onboard create, open, and then manage their investment or retirement accounts that were alternatives capable. But the back end chassis that's needed is you need a trust company to do it on the back end. So we had partnered up with an organization, not Digital Trust at that time. Digital Trust was always the backup. So I guess note to any entrepreneurs out there, you know, when you don't want to rely on just one big contract, you typically have your main one and then you have a backup one in a lesser role just in case something happens with your main provider. And that's what we did. So we had a primary custodian relationship, ended up not going a little sideways in our renegotiations as we were scaling, and Digital Trust was our backup. So we were sending one out of every six or seven of our accounts to the secondary custodian, right? Enough to maintain that relationship. And over the years, it just, you know, we came to the decision as a group that we would merge our company into theirs. Because now we own the vertical stack. So now we not only have the front-facing interface to open, create, manage those accounts, but we were directly integrated and under the same ownership structure as the company that held custody, held the paper to all the investment assets. So we did that, and then we put that under the umbrella of an organization. We own the domain retired.com. So we use that as our parent company name. And there's Digital Trust, Rocket Dollar consumer facing, and then we have a sister company for crypto IRAs called BitcoinIRA.com.
Bitcoin IRA, is that
mm-hmm. Yeah, IRA? It does cryptocurrencies generally in an IRA, as the name implies, but it just happens to be called Bitcoin IRA.
Fascinating. Well, I can think of several ways, but I would love kind of your two cents, Henry, on all the different ways that people can utilize their self-directed IRA to do. I'll say do good, right, in communities. And you probably have some stories of, you know, folks that have utilized their IRA, right, to basically sure. do good in their community. But can you share some of those?
We have a lot of them. And that was one of the things that I really loved after we started the company. I didn't know this part when I started. I just thought that, hey, there were no IRA providers that really specialized in a tech-enabled interface to allow IRA money to be invested into private deals, because the Fidelities and Vanguards and Schwabs of the world, they were in the business of selling stocks and mutual funds. So they didn't want to let their customers buy private investments. But the part that I really liked that really touched me as we were building the business was that what I started noticing was I thought people were going to unlock their IRAs with Rocket Dollar, and then go into these pure private investments, like a private, you know, equity type fund as a limited partner investment, some New York based private equity fund that they had access to as a friends and family. But what our customers ended up doing was rolling over their 401ks or old ones and IRAs to us and utilizing that money. And let's say that they lived in some city, and this is an early example, but this customer of ours, she grew up in San Antonio, Texas. So San Antonio is not, it's a big city, but it's not the wealthiest market in the United States. And you know, as you wear your Cleveland Cavaliers, it's been known for a long time that San Antonio is actually the smallest NBA market in terms of like socioeconomic status that existed, even though they had that good, great run from 98 to 2010, you know, with four championships. And so she had used her old management consulting 401k in a Rocket Dollar account to purchase investment properties back where she grew up in San Antonio. And her thinking was that instead of me buying stocks and mutual funds and just padding the pockets of Wall Street firms, I could buy these homes. It's an investment for me that goes up in value. I collect the rent, and now there's a family who's able to put a roof over their head in the area of the country that I grew up in. And she ended up going to Harvard Business School, working in New York City at a management consulting firm, very successful. You know, we're talking mid six figure base salary out of college. And this is what she chose to do. And she said, I get what I need, which is I get to invest my money and make a return on it. But I also get to flow that money back into the community that I came from before coming to Harvard in New York City.
Yeah,
it was like an amazing story. And we have more and more of those, like people are using their accounts. And we see people basically deploying funds to keep a small business open that they used to frequent. I have one where we have a group of friends who decided to invest in the business owner of a bar where they all met, and they became lifelong friends. And it was basically down the street from the college they went to, University of North Carolina. the bar was going to go out of business, and they knew the owner because they used to party there and hang out, and that's where they met each other, and now they're lifelong friends. They're in their 40s. Bar wasn't doing well, you know, because everything kind of got regentrified or gentrified, and they put in the money to invest and take ownership of this particular bar.
Interesting. Well, the gal in San Antonio, we talk about the definition of distress to success, right? From, I think, I don't know if you mentioned it now or we were talking about it again in the green room, but you came from a rougher part of San Antonio, Harvard Law School, right? Was able to utilize her
Harvard Business School,
Harvard Business School, sorry, and able to use her IRA to invest back in the town and the communities that she came from. That's awesome. Exactly. And I think that's, I mean, for those that are listening and going, well, how does this whole IRA thing have to do with, you know, what this distress to success is all about? But a lot of the folks that I talk to that are listeners of the show, not all of them, but many of them, I mean, they're kind of in a capital raise mode at certain stages of their project. I'm certainly not in the category, and I don't think most of our listeners are in the category of not needing external capital of some form. And many people don't even know, like, hey, you don't need the rich friend that just has $1 million sitting in their bank, right? That's highly unlikely that people have multi-millions just sitting in their bank, right? But, depending on the investment and, you know, the security laws, right, and what you can and can't do, you do have the ability of going to friends and family that has a 401k, and if they believe in you, right, and they would need to convert that over, right, utilizing services like Rocket Dollar, but they can invest in that, either that business venture or that real estate project, which is what we talk about mostly.
Exactly.
And it's a very, very powerful tool of unlocking, my understanding, the largest, source of capital in the U.S. Is that the right?
It's one of the largest for sure. So the aggregate total, just to put numbers on it. So they, there's an organization, industry organization named Cerulli and Associates, a consulting firm, and they run these numbers every 6 months, I believe it is. And the most recent one, so this is somewhere in 2025. And obviously we've had continued growth in the base stock markets and public equities markets, but the numbers are in excess of $46 trillion in U.S. retirement accounts. So that's all pensions, all IRAs, all 401ks, and so forth. But, you know, to your point that right now, 99% plus of that particular money, because these are held by individual folks, right, in pensions, maybe the pensions managed as a group, but the IRAs are managed by individuals. So they're invested in index funds and individual stocks and bonds and mutual funds at Fidelity's, Vanguard, Schwab's, Merrill Lynch's, Edward Jones, and so forth. But if a redistribution of that capital were to go back into local communities, let's say the top 75 markets and some even small fraction of it from a real estate standpoint, these aren't institutional owners who own 100 homes as a private equity firm. This could be like, that woman who grew up in San Antonio and is now a successful management consultant on the East Coast. It could be someone listening to your podcast right now. Could tap into old college friends of theirs, and maybe they've had gains in the stock market. So you're not actually asking them to go into different investments. You're actually asking them to diversify, maybe take chips off the table of an investment account that maybe has gone up more than they would expect it to have done. So you're just kind of taking it off. So I always think about it that Rocket Dollar accounts are full of money. That's usually that take the chip off the table and just play with what you came with.
Do something slightly different, right? Diversification, exactly.
Right, and have a little more tangible attachment to it. That's what people like too, because now stocks and all investments are so digitized with mobile apps in your phone that there's no real tangible aspect of investments anymore. But being able to say that, hey, look, I contributed to a real estate project in an opportunity zone. And if you were doing it, you weren't doing it for the tax reasons, right? You're doing it because it was labeled as an opportunity zone. But you're matching up the free capital that you have, which is your IRA money that you can't actually use for anything other than investments for 20 years, to go into an opportunity that happens to be based in an area that even municipalities have designated need to be, brought up
right
to modern standards or something like that. So you wouldn't invest for the normal opportunity zone tax credits. You'd be investing because, you have some sort of tangible reason to care about that part of the country or that part of a city.
Right. Well, yeah, I guess there's no additional benefit to the opportunity zone, using
IRA funds, right, on that particular scenario. But, you know, you still are passionate about that part of town, right? And opportunity zones are typically in rougher part of towns. We see it all the time in blighted communities. And so exactly. A lot of people participate.
Well, and the reality is that the reason why they had to designate those areas as opportunity zones in the first place was to cater to the person who's got $1 million sitting in their bank account.
Right.
Right. I mean, to be fair, they're not actually there so the average American retail investor could say, oh, I want to take advantage of that. Because that average American retail investor, the large majority of their investment assets are probably tied up in these old 401ks across mm-hmm. the average of 4.3 jobs that they've had if they're 40 years old today.
That's exactly right. Well, I guess, Henry, one of my favorite questions, right, is, you know, I quite frankly, you were a lot smarter in your progress from, I'll say, corporate world, right, to the entrepreneur world. But do you have one, maybe two, maybe three, I'll say tidbits of advice you'd give, you know, young Henry, that would avoid, you know, I'll say excessive pain, whether it's financial pain or, you know, mental pain from, you know, having to deal with certain scenarios that would, you know, expedite your success, having done it again?
Yes. You know, when I was younger, and I'm getting kind of old now, so I'm getting close to 50 years old, but I always think of the younger version of myself. And I used to pride myself on being this like go, go, go person, always on the move. And I kind of realize now as I get older that I don't go and I don't get any more done or I don't get anywhere faster by just going as fast as possible. You know, I do better now by having systems and taking time. So I guess maybe the concise part of the advice that I would give to myself was that you never succeed and rise to the level of your goals and expectations. You fail to the level of your system. So like even today, like I have this weird system, but I'm a very early morning person. I wake up at 4:30. I have my time until 6:30. And then from 6:30 until 4:30 is kind of my concentrated sort of work time. And I start early in the day because I can do that stuff when no one's calling me from 6:30 to 9 a.m. in the morning, in addition to obviously getting children ready for school. And then when work ends, you know, the 4:30 to 7 is dedicated to sort of like, you know, family time. I got to get them home from school, get them sort of set up for the evening. And then maybe, depending on how long I can stay up at the end of the day, that 7 to 9 is my time and then start all over again. So it's like a 4:30 to 7, 7 to 4:30, and then 4:30 to 7, like a three-part system that I block my day off.
I like that. What was that? How did you state that again? You sync to the level of your systems? Is that the...
So you don't rise to the level of your expectations and goals. You fail to the level of your systems.
What's
so if you have bad systems and protocols, like, you know, you won't succeed anyway because you don't have a system in place to do anything.
Yeah, that's fun. That's awesome. I just changed my carve out. We're going to get that to in a second. But that reminds me of a book that I recently was listening to with my daughter called Chop Wood, Carry Water. Anyway. We'll get to that in a second. Any other tidbits you'd give a younger Henry?
I think just maybe enjoy life a little bit more. It's gone. I'm a Texas guy, native Texas guy, and he was living here in Austin. I'm not sure at the end of his life, but today is as we sort of talk, it's February 13th. But on February 11th, James Vanderbeek passed away. You know, the Varsity Blues, and that was obviously took place in the Friday Night Lights Texas footballs, high school football teams. And he made a post knowing that he was going to pass away. And he was asked this exact same question. And I thought his answer was perfect. He just said that, you know, looking back, he said, what would I tell my younger self? And this was the exact question. And he paraphrased the question. He just said that, you know, take time to enjoy life a little bit more, you know, be happy. Don't always be in a rush, like, you know, just appreciate the things and trust in God. And if God doesn't, you know, really fit into your ecosystem, just take the word God out and then leave the rest there and just, you know, take time, enjoy the moments and be happier.
Stop and smell the roses. My mother used to and still says today, which is so appropriate.
But it was just a great clip that came out, and he was living here in the Austin, Texas area, not too far from where I was in West Austin. So I'd seen him, you know, at times years ago, I guess probably before he got more sick or before he was sick and so forth. And he'd had his family out there, but
that's, I think you nailed it. That's perfect advice, I think, for anybody and everybody of don't get caught up too much in the, you know, it is not an equation of you work harder, right? You achieve more, right? Working smarter, finding people, in my experience, finding people that are smarter than me to add to the team, and jointly, right? Working smarter, sure, has achieved much grander things than me just working harder and doing it all myself. So I guess kind of moving into the carve outs, Henry, this is one of my favorite parts of the show. I totally stole it from another podcast that I love. But basically the concept is any gadget, book, quote, I guess kind of already stole one from, you're going to have to come up with another one, but anything along those lines that you'd like to share with the audience that has nothing to do with what we talked about today. And I'll give you a few minutes to think about it, 'cause I'm going to go first. And you reminded me of this one. It is a little bit of a repeat because I did mention this book many episodes ago, but at that time I had just started it, and so I'm going to repeat it. But it's called Chop Wood, Carry Water by Joshua Metcalf, and talks about a lot of those things. But the quote that he had in there that you reminded me of is the story is a boy and he's talking to his sensei, and the sensei basically said, you don't rise to, you know, to the occasion, you sink to the level of your training. And that was one of the quotes that one of many in that book that have stuck with me. And I happened to be listening to it one time with my daughter in the car, and my daughter was 8 at the time, and she goes, okay, this is interesting. And so I just asked her, like, well, would you like to listen to it from the beginning? She said, yeah. So she and I, that's what we listened to for several months, right? It's about 5-10 minutes from school to home.
Sure.
Pick her up. And that's what we listened to in the car. And you know, I tell you what, that was fun, but is even better about 6 months after we finished the book, when she quoted it in how she wanted to start eating healthier. She goes, well, you know, that book that we
wrote.
I was like, this was such an amazing, like, one, it's a great book, I highly recommend it, but just the immediate impact it had on, you know, children as well as myself was amazing. So hopefully I gave you enough time, Henry, to kind of think of a carve out of your own, but there's mine for the day. Yeah.
So mine, I'll go with the gadget, because this is probably one that I'm going to guess all the guests you've had won't talk about this one, but it's a recent one for me. It was kind of a mini Christmas gift I bought to myself, not this past Christmas or the one before, but I bought myself a Ninja Creami, so the ice cream maker from Ninja Shark. And I basically have those prepped. So I essentially I did two things with it. One, I satisfy my sweet tooth craving and I eat one every night. And then two, I stopped buying those pre-made protein shakes that you buy in the 30-pack boxes at a Costco or Sam's Club warehouse. And I just basically mix protein powder and almond water and prep the containers and eat one per night. And, you know, feels like you're eating ice cream, a whole pint, for roughly 200 calories. Satisfies a sweet tooth, gives you 30 grams of protein, and makes a protein shake like much more filling and enjoyable. So it's kind of the way, it's my nightcap. So I think in the 60s, you know, maybe someone my age would like sort of do that wind down with a glass of scotch from the snifter. yeah. But, you know, today in this age of Aura rings, like you were telling me about that you wear, and data tracking and health and fitness, that you got the 2026 version for a 50-year-old person, if they actually want to live a long life, isn't probably to down like a scotch neat every night, but might be to actually eat a pint of healthy ice cream. So yes, I'd go with Ninja Creami.
Ninja Creami. And what was the recipe one more time?
Just for me, 1.5 scoops of protein powder, and you can buy any flavor. I'm currently going through birthday cake flavor protein and making that. And it has a setting so you could do mix-in. So you could throw like a couple of Oreos in there. You could throw like a couple of almonds. You could throw like, you know, frozen fruit. Depending on what you feel like that night, you're making basically gourmet stuff for about 200 to 250 calories per night.
I'm fairly certain this gadget is going to make an appearance in our household, because myself and my kids love ice cream. So this will be a much healthier version than going to Dairy Queen up the road once a month. So I appreciate that. I'm sure everyone else listening does as well. Well, Henry, I immensely appreciate your time. If anybody wants to connect with you or learn more about Rocket Dollar or Digital Trust or Bitcoin, IRA, like, how can I do that?
So the Rocket Dollar side is easy. We have ourselves up at rocketdollar.com. So RocketDollar. And then for those in your community that really even have questions about how this may work, when you go to that page, there's actually a phone number that we have. So we have folks to answer that call just for information purposes live, United States-based folks, 855-762-5383. And for those of you who are old enough to remember that numbers on a phone actually represent letters when we had the text in the early days, but it's 1-855-ROCKET-D. So that's actually our phone number is 1-855-ROCKET-D. And then for me to find personally, I'm pretty easy. Henry Yoshida, my biggest probably channels are LinkedIn, where you can find me under my name, or on Instagram at FitFinanceHenry. But, those are the two, but I'd go to Rocket Dollar. And if you have questions, even if it's just to understand about how alternatives fit inside of an IRA, or am I eligible to roll this type of account to you and so forth, I'd call that number and just have the conversation. There's no pressure. It's not a sales line. It's just more of an information line for folks.
That's perfect. Perfect. Well, everybody listening that's wondering that website, it's definitely going to be in the show notes below. And Henry, thank you again for joining us and sharing your knowledge and your story. I think it's amazing, and hope to connect with you again soon. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Distress to Success.